So today I'm here with Andy Sorcini, who is Mr. Baby Man from Dig. I'm really excited to have this interview. This is a very different interview. Normally we're talking to CEOs and guys that are running the companies. Andy is a guy that works in a startup in Los Angeles. He was just explaining. I'm sure he'll tell us a little bit more about that. And he is someone that can drive a large amount of traffic, probably more traffic than a lot of people on the entire internet because of the influence that he has on website Dig. And I'm fascinated by Dig, and Andy's sort of one of the leaders in that community, and he's here today to tell us a little bit more about who he is and what he does. Does that sound reasonable, Andy? Is it a reasonable summary?
I would say so, yes. How are you today?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
I'm doing good.
So you want to just tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from and what you've been up to?
Well, by trade, I'm a film editor, and I currently work for a small independent production company. I've worked 15 years for the Disney company, and the company I work for right now is affiliated with Disney, but not really a part of the Disney empire as such. And beyond that, I can't really say too much about it. But I'm still doing the same type of thing that I've been doing before, which is film editing. And I discovered Dig in kind of a roundabout.
What does film editing mean? So your guy comes in and edits a movie before it gets published, before it's released?
Yeah. Well, you know, we work on both ends of the spectrum. When I was working for Disney, I was working in animation, and in animation there are two phases of editing. There's pre-production and post-production, and the pre-production is when artists want to episode of an animated TV show or a movie is put together, they put it together in what's called a story reel, which is basically it's like a comic book. You know, it's still pictures of the way the action is going to proceed in a film. And in order to determine the pacing of the film, those still pictures have to be videotaped or scanned or in some fashion or another ingested into a computer. And then we, as film editors, will put the still pictures together and time them out in the way that we feel the flow is going to be for the final picture. And that gets by the approval of the director and the producer and so on and so forth. And that's pre-production editing. And post-production editing is when the story reel, which is now what the storyboard panel is called, the story reel is sent out to an animation house, or if the animation is done in-house and the film is animated and you get back the individual scenes, then the scenes are cut together by the editor. And
do you do both sides, I do?
Yeah, I do both sides.
And have you seen a book about your company? Do they know who you are at work?
No, they really, I mean, other than the fact that I'm an editor, no, they're not really. I find generally that a lot of people are, the cachet that I hold doesn't really translate outside of Web 2.0. And for that, I'm actually grateful. Because I think, believe it or not, outside of the internet, I'm just a regular Joe, and I'm perfectly all right with that.
And so you're a married guy with what, two kids living with your family, one kid in Los Angeles, right?
That's correct.
Right. So tell us about Dig and how did you get started, how did you find it?
Well, I came about Dig in a roundabout way. I was a huge fan of Tech TV, and before that, ZD TV, Ziff Davis TV, and a huge fan of the show The Screensavers, which there had been nothing like that on television before, which was a television show that was specifically geared towards the technology enthusiast and didn't dumb itself down. Essentially, they assumed that the people watching the show had already had a full knowledge of the technology that they were talking about. So they didn't feel that they had to dumb themselves down or talk down to their audience. Their audience was essentially they were custom geared towards their audience, and that was me, you know, the technology enthusiast, somebody who loves tech. And the to make a long story short, the on screen server there were several hosts, Leo Laporte, and a couple of other hosts. Kevin Rose was one of the hosts, and Tech TV essentially broke up and then became G4. And they dropped the Screensavers as a show, and when they did that, all of the principals went off to do other things. Leo Laporte, Patrick Martin, Kevin Rowe, they all went to do things outside of broadcast television. And what they essentially settled on was podcasts. And so I have followed their podcasts. I listened to Leo's podcast. Patrick Norton had DLTV for a while until he finally settled in with Revision 3. And
so
Kevin Rose...
You followed those guys for years, and so then when Kevin Rose came out with Dig, you just jumped right on it.
Kevin Rose came out with the Dig Nation podcast, and I followed that. And it was through Dig Nation that I discovered Dig. I had never heard of Dig before the Dig Nation podcast. And so I joined Dig and would just read the stories on the site. I wouldn't participate at first. But after a while, I noticed that it was user-generated content and that anyone could participate. And so I started looking around the Internet for stories that I thought would be interesting to the Dig audience and started submitting those. And it was, I think, and I may be wrong about this, but I think it was like my third submission that hit the front page.
So it was like a gambler thing, like, yeah, you hit a jackpot that one time, and there's that high, and you're like, my God, I got to come back for more.
Well, you know, it's exciting to know that something that you like is appealing to a broader range of people, to know that something that you find appealing is also appealing to this vast majority of the Dig audience. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a...
So what happened there? I mean, because, I don't know, are you actually still at it right now? Are you still number one Digger?
Yeah, well, you know, I avoid using hierarchical terms like that, you know, because Dig itself has removed the their list of top diggers, is what they used to be called.
Right, but still had a data.
Yeah, the data is still there, and yes, I'm technically, according to that data, I still have more front page stories than any other user. But things shift around. It's a moving target. You know, there are different people who have more stories per month or per week. You know, I think I hold the record for more the most of all time, but I'm certainly not the number one user on a weekly or monthly.
Now, and I see you there, so you are. Yeah, you're still well and truly number one. Mm-hmm. Stories popular. Next
yeah,
is,
over 3,000. Yeah, so I'm grateful that for the most part that the stuff that I've liked has been also appealed to the majority of the audience. But you know, if you go on a strictly on a ratio basis, they have what's known as a popularity percentage, and that is essentially the number of stories that you've submitted. The ratio of the number of stories you submitted to the number of stories that have actually hit the front page. And by that ratio, I have a 27% popularity, which means that less than a third of the stories that I've submitted have actually made the front page.
Well, so that's an interesting point then. How do you have that? If, I mean, a third of the stuff that you submit goes to the front page, or just under, how on earth do you manage to predict that with so much accuracy?
I don't try to predict it. I just submit the best stuff that I can find. And that's basically the bottom line.
That's what you think's the best, and then are you kind of the Dig version of Joe the Plumber? Like, you represent the everyman that follows Dig stuff, and so therefore tends to be what you like, is liked by a lot of people.
Yes, I would say so. You know, I submit the stuff that I feel is the best content and the content that will most appeal to the majority of the Dig audience. And in that respect, it turns out to be about a third of the stuff that I submit. People also share that sentiment with that they like it as well.
So, I mean, I've got to ask, you're obviously, well, there's a couple of questions here, but firstly, what's your motivation? You obviously spend a lot of time on this.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you do it? Why do so much? You're not getting, I assume you're not getting paid, or are you, and how does that work?
No, I'm not getting paid. It's basically, it's a hobby for me, but it's a great, no other hobby that I know of has the fringe benefit of keeping you so well informed in current events. I mean, that's the one thing about Dig and other social news and networking groups that I know of. It's amazing how quickly the people who use those sites are informed about current events outside of the general populace. Like, I will know of something that I won't hear in mainstream media for literally 2 or 3 days, sometimes 2 or 3 days to a week out. Then I'll hear something that I first saw on Dig or first saw on other social news sites. And it just fascinates me how the turnaround time between the time that I'm informed of something through my using social news sites and how late mainstream media picks it up.
So are you using other sites other than Dig, or are you mainly focused on Dig?
Yeah, I also use Nix.com and Reddit, although on Reddit I don't go by Mr. Babyman.
Are you a top user on Reddit as well?
No, but I'm doing okay, actually. I'm doing okay. And this is the interesting thing. I started using Reddit because wanted to know, for my own sense of satisfaction, if it was just the Mr. Baseman name that was driving stories.
All right, right.
You know, it's kind of like, I liken it to when Stephen King decided that he was going to ghostwrite under the pen name Richard Bachman. He did that because he wanted to know if it was just the Stephen King name that was selling books, and if he lost his focus, that he couldn't make it happen if he went by a different name entirely.
So I'm on the edge of my seat. What was the answer?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing quite well. You know, I've only been at it for less than a year on Reddit, and I'm not doing too bad, actually.
Interesting. Fair enough.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it proves the point that it's all about finding the content and not necessarily the name. I mean, I can start from scratch at any site and still have the ability to find content that I feel would be appealing to other users of the networks.
Okay. I want to ask a big question. I mean, you briefly answered it, but I want to ask about it a little bit more in depth. And that's the traffic that gets sent through Dig you guys could potentially be sending around. In fact, I'm sure you are sending around hundreds of millions of dollars worth of traffic per year. I mean, there is value to it. Like, people complain that Dig traffic is low quality traffic because people just come and leave. But it's still, for sites doing CPM advertising and that kind of stuff, it is very, very high value. So there's obviously a big opportunity for financial payback on this sort of stuff. Now, you said point blank you don't. I mean, have you ever accepted any kind of money at all?
No, not for submitting a story to Dig. I just thought, first of all, it gets the terms of service at Dig in particular. So I wouldn't feel right about doing that. And I personally wouldn't feel right about doing it either, because it just feels a little slimy to me. You know, I'm not in it to make money off of people for them giving me their story and submitting it. The bottom line is, it really wouldn't work out that way anyway, because what people are attracted to is the content. So if you're trying to promote content that is not worthy, and you're doing it by paying a submitter to submit it for you, you're wasting your money. You're wasting your money because no matter how good the submitter is, if the content isn't worth it, people aren't going to go for it. People aren't going to promote it.
If you take content that's on the edge a little bit, you know, you or one of the others in your position could you know, be the one that tip it over the edge, and instead of getting a few digs and a little bit of traffic, it becomes a snowball, right? Or a snowstorm.
I suppose. But, you know, content that's usually on the edge a little bit is promotable without any sort of, you know, artificial means, without being paid for it.
But there are other top-tier users that have accepted money and do accept money. Is that not correct?
I have read about that, yeah. I mean, I don't know anybody personally, but I have read stories. In fact, there was one story, I can't remember whose blog it was, but somebody had conducted an interview with that, ironically enough, the interviewer had paid that person to conduct, and how the interviewee was actually, you know, being paid by sites to submit content. And for a while there, I was trying to figure out who it was, but I could never figure out. I think I narrowed it down to a couple of people, but I could never figure out quite who it was.
And I guess that sort of stuff would be kept very on the DL.
Yeah, you know, there's another site that I ran across recently called Social Elves, and I'm almost sorry that I mentioned their name out loud, because I think what they're doing is not very scrupulous. But they guarantee a front page for like $300, and once again, I know that those people that are working there at Social Elves, they have to have come from within the Dig community, and people within the Dig community know everybody else. We all know everybody else, so. That's the thing, is that whoever runs Social Elves has got to be somebody that I know or have known at one time, but I don't know who it is. And, you know, I don't condone what they're doing.
So if you did find out who it was that, or who is being paid for Dig, for submitting stories, would that effectively lock them out of your circle?
Well, I wouldn't rat them out, because it's not my business to poke into their business, but I would personally disassociate myself with them.
Right. Have you been offered money to submit stories?
Oh, I'm offered money all the time.
Awesome.
A couple times a week at least. But I, you know, the first thing right off the bat is somebody approaches me like that. I tell them right off the bat, I don't accept money for this. And I'll tell them, you know, I will be happy to take a look at your stories. I'll be more than happy to take a look at what you have to share with me. And if I feel that it's something that is appealing to the Dig community, I'll be happy to submit, you know, free of charge. But I won't take it. But 9 times out of 10, it's stuff it's some sort of form of marketing, and it's just stuff that the Dig community will see through right away, and I don't even bother.
What's the biggest offer you've had so far?
You know, I have heard of people offering, like, the person who conducted this interview claimed that he had been offered upwards of 100,000, I think it was 100,000 per submission or something like that. That's crazy money. I've never been offered anywhere close to that, but I think maybe that is because people already are aware of my reputation and how I feel about it. I would say, I think maybe 5,000.
And is that a guarantee that it hits the front page or gets to the top 24 hours, or is that just...
I think that was just to submit. The conversation really didn't get much further than that. Because a lot of times the conversation will start with, do you accept money for big submissions, or can I pay you for a big submission? And I don't even get into it at that point and just outright tell them, I don't do that.
So the people typically that are offering you, are they like MLM-type companies, or what kind of guys are typically coming to you?
A lot of them are social marketing or people who have some sort of marketing that they want to promote. I would say 90%.
I mean, are they Viagra-type guys, or?
I don't really know, because a lot of times the conversation, as I said, doesn't really get much further. Once they learn that I don't accept money for that, the conversation doesn't go much further than that. Although I do tell them straight out, I'll be happy to take a look at what you've got.
Right.
If it's something, because, you never know, you might find a diamond in the rough. I also get approached by a lot of online content producers. And those online content producers will say, hey, I've got this story coming up. I'll give you some examples, like Car and Driver or Popular Mechanics or content producers like that. And they will tip me off to stories that they're going to be promoting. And I say the same thing to them. I don't accept any money, but I'll be happy to take a look at the content. And if I think it would appeal to the rest of the dig community, I'll be happy to share it. And a lot of times that content is really good content, and it's content that I feel the dig community would enjoy. And I do share that content. I'm happy to share whatever content somebody feels is going to be of value to the dig community. But that the actual content that is valuable to the dig community is few, and the margin of success for that is very slim.
Don't you ever think about, you're an employee, you could be working from home, you could be submitting stuff on Dig all day long and getting paid for it, and that could be your income. I mean, that's all got across your mind. Buy some nice stuff for your kid and take your wife out more, and all those sorts of things you could do with more money. It's got to be tempting, or is it just not even coming across your mind?
Well, I mean, there are two things. First of all, I think if my hobby, which I'm enjoying and having a lot of fun with, would become an occupation, it would take all the fun out of it and put all the stress into it. Then I would have to be concerned about, did I make certain quota, or did I fulfill certain obligations in order to earn my keep. And my skill set in my regular occupation is valuable enough that I don't have to worry about how well I do on Dig or any other social news networks. I exist completely off of what I do for a living. So I don't have to, I can keep my hobby to keep it as a fun thing for me to do. I don't have to worry about it being a job requirement. Oh, and the second thing is, the second thing I wanted to mention is, even if that were the case, even if I were to decide to monetize this in some way, I would not do it by accepting money for submissions. I think that the optimum way to do that is, because that is getting fish for people. And instead of getting fish for people, I would rather teach someone how to fish. I'd rather teach content producers how to create content that would be appealing to that demographic, as opposed to being responsible.
I guess the other issue as well would be, if you were well known to be taking money, then, like you said, probably other guys would say the same. They'd be like, well, baby man taking cash now, I'm not gonna work with him on this stuff so much. And so that would probably reduce your influence as well, wouldn't it?
Right, exactly. Well, and that would, people would always be wondering, is the content that he's promoting something that he's been paid for? Is it legitimate, or is it something that he really feels is interesting to the rest of the dig community? And I think a lot of my reputation relies on the fact that this is something that I came across one way or another, and I found to be appealing to the rest of the dig community. And if it was, if people had in the back of their mind that this is something that I was being paid for, the value of the stuff that I would submit would have less of a value overall.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, you talked a bit about your relationships with others. What does that mean? Do you actually know the other, let's say the top 1,000 diggers? Do you know all those guys? And what does the relationship mean? Do you go out to bars with them? Do you talk to them on Instant Messenger? How do you actually know these guys?
Yeah, actually, I would say in the top 100, I know quite a few of those people, and I talk with them over email, over IM. I've gone to bars with a couple of them, and met a few of them in real life, and you know, we all have the same hobby. For a lot of us, it's not a hobby. A lot of people that I know that are in the top 100 are actually in the social marketing field, and that's not to say that they're necessarily submitting gig stories for pay, but they're in the field of helping other people create content that is appealing to that demographic. What some would call dig bait, link bait.
Right.
I know a lot of the people. We hang out and we talk. We have a shared background, so we can relate. We can all relate.
I mean, what do you talk about? It's like, hey, dude, go dig my thing, or you guys like, hey, you know, that was a cool picture of a car.
Well, a lot of times we'll talk about, like, when it gets down to talking about submitting for social news sites, we talk about strategies, we talk about particular submissions, if somebody made a submission that we found was particularly interesting, or in the way other submitters are finding their content, perhaps, or we talk about sites that might be interesting to other gig users. It's basically, you know, water cooler discussion.
So you guys are talking about you normally say business, but it's not the business behind gig, but the strategy behind keeping stuff up and driving traffic. And that's effectively that's what you're talking about. It's like a team chatting about.
Yes, that is effectively we are like a team, but we're not working. But we're all working. But we're like a team. But when it comes down to it, we're all. What am I trying to say? We're like a team, but when it comes down to it, we're all. It's all on us. We're all trying to excel individually. But you know what? It's kind of, having said that, there's a sense of competition. There's a sense of competition in that each of us want to do as well as we individually can. But at the same time, it's a zero-sum game. As we all try to help each other as well.
So you're competing against each other to get to the top, but at the same time, you're helping each other get there.
Yes, that's correct.
So how does that work? I mean, surely, do you not help the guys that are coming close to you? And actually, I mean, to that point, how on earth, why are you better than the others? I guess that's objective, but you know, on these rankings, you're far and away more popular than the other guys.
Well, I think, believe it or not, I think it does come down to it is objective. It's basically about, I think, it's the stuff that appeals to me is, I think, the stuff that appeals to more other people in general. And also, you have to take into account that there are, that I work in a volume basis as well. Like,
yeah, but you do volume, but you're doing quality because a third of your submissions gets the front page, right?
Yes, so, but I do know other submitters for whom almost half of their submissions get to the front page, 40%, 45%. So those, I really respect those people because those people don't have to work quite as hard to get more of their stories on the front page than I do.
How much time do you spend each day on dig?
I would say on average I'd say about an hour in the morning, and the majority of it is at night after my wife and my daughter have gone to bed. And then occasionally during the day, if I have a break or anyone who's in the film industry will tell you that it's what's known as a hurry up and wait business, which means that when we are doing something fast and furious at a job, but a lot of it involves waiting for the next rush to happen. So there is a little bit of downtime or time when not so much downtime, but time when we're waiting for the machine to do something. Like in my industry, when we're ingesting content into the machine, we call it digitizing, and a lot of times the computer has to basically do that work. We get started, but it has to do that work, and we're basically babysitters. And during that time, there is some free time to check email, whatever, and a lot of times I'll log on to Dig and check my RSS feed and see if there's anything interesting there to submit. So
there's a lot of gaps in during the day where you can do it. You're doing it late at night after your family's gone to bed, and then a little bit in the morning.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, we're talking like 5 hours a day, you're on there?
I would say between 4 and 5, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, you're pretty serious about it.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I mean, I can't think of, it's my primary hobby. You know, I love to play video games, too, when I'm not social news submitting, and I'm a huge video game fan. I think I always have been from the early days, from, you know, Atari days.
Oh, but, sorry, I didn't know. I'm an Amiga guy. I had an Amiga in the Commodore 64.
Oh,
we had in Australia.
There was nothing for the Amiga at that time. Everything was on the Atari.
Well, back in that time, the Amiga was where it was at. We kind of looked down on the Atari.
Oh, really?
How old are you? I'm 36. How old are you?
I'm 40.
Okay.
So I went straight from Atari to Nintendo.
All right. Yeah, I popped up to the Amiga. What did your wife think about all this? I mean, obviously, she's the one that came up with your nickname, right?
That's correct.
Could you pick a more embarrassing nickname?
Yeah, well, you know, it was a pet name for me, and I've explained this before in other interviews, but it's an homage to my arrested development. It's the fact that I'm such a kid at heart,
right.
Even though I'm as old as I am and have a kid myself.
I think even though you're the guy with the Mr. Babyman name, it probably well describes a lot of love in us.
Totally does. There's a lot of arrested development out there.
What did your wife think about it? Is she cool with it? Does she think you're crazy? I mean, where does she come from?
She's both cool with it, and she thinks I'm crazy. she occasionally finds herself having to be extremely tolerant with what is essentially a hobby that doesn't pay any money. So I test her patience often with that. But I try to keep it during hours when either she's not up or my daughter's not up, so it doesn't take away from our family time.
Right. No, fair enough. I've got so many things I want to ask you about. How did you actually do? I've seen a lot of comments on there saying like, Mr. Babyman is using automated tools, and you know, I saw a story posted where they were looking at the timings of some of the digs being done. They were being done too fast for a human to have done them.
Well, they have governors in place to prevent that from happening anymore. But you know, if you try and do that now, you'll get a pop up that says, you know, whoa, you're digging too fast. Slow down there. And I've never seen that pop up since they've enacted those governors, so I think I'm probably doing it at the right pace. But, you know, you used to be able to just, and I still do open up stories in different tabs on Firefox, which is my preferred browser, and just click through the stories on each of the tabs. But now I do it a little bit slower now. Or sometimes I'll count to three before I click the next story in the tab.
So you're manually doing all the voting by hand?
Yes.
Have you ever used tools?
No. No, every single story that I've ever done has been me sitting down at the computer, clicking the button.
Right. Now, how does this sort of stuff work? I mean, you know the other guys in the community. How does it actually work? Like, why are you voting for their stuff? And I mean, is it the trading behind the scenes going on? Like, okay, you know, I got your back. I'll vote your next 100 stories up. Like, how does that actually work?
I'm sorry, one more time?
How does it actually work in terms of voting for stories? Like, why do you vote for guys' stories? I mean, you're wheeling and dealing with guys behind the scenes, right, to vote for each other's stories. How does that actually happen?
No, I mean, nothing really happens behind the scenes. I have a list of friends that I have added to my, you know, my friends list, and I will go through my friends' stories and select the ones that are that appeal to me, or that I think would also appeal to the big audience. But there's no, like, behind the scenes, no back channel sort of arrangements. It's just basically, you know, if I'm looking at my friends list and I see a story that I like and I think would appeal to everybody, I'll click it as well. Or the other thing that'll happen is I'm looking at the dig front page and I notice that I'm seeing a lot of really good stories from a particular submitter, I will add that submitter to my friends list so that I will now be watching their stories as well. And then it's just basically going through my friends list and now, having said that, now there's the recommendation engine, which I really like because it gives me the opportunity to see a lot of other submitters that I would normally have never have noticed. So I'll find a lot of great stories through those submitters too, and I've added friends from within that process as well. Like I've gone through the recommendation engine and have found guys who are great submitters, and I'll add them as my friends as well.
So what you're saying is it's not so much based on relationships with guys; it's more around the content. I mean, so you're actually checking every single thing out.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't often have the time to check them out in depth, but the same things that appeal to a lot of the big users appeal to me, which is a lot of times is a very enticing title or description. You know,
so if you're not actually checking something out in depth, there is kind of an informal thing where you're voting for another guy's stuff and he's voting for yours, right?
But there's no sort of a secret arrangement for that. I mean, I don't tell anyone to vote for myself, or anyone is free to vote for any of my stuff if they want to, or not vote for it, or bury it, or you know, or do anything with it. It's all basically what goes through my process is I go through my friend list, then I'll go through the upcoming the recommendation engine, and then eventually through the front page. And I feel that my votes on stuff that are for the front page are less crucial to the submitters because it's already on the front page. It's not going to make it any more on the front page by my digging it. So for me to help out my fellow submitters, it's of more value to go through stuff that is not yet on the front page. Does that make sense?
If you were to stop voting for other people's submissions, do you think you would lose the ability to get front page submissions like you have?
I honestly don't know. But I think that people still respond to good content, and I still provide the best content that I can. And there have been days where I haven't dug other people's stories as much as I've submitted my own, and I don't see any negative impact from doing that. You know, I've had essentially the same amount of stories dug on there as I normally have. It's just, the same amount of stories submitted from there. Let me start that over again. I've seen the same amount of stories promoted from those days than I have on any other day. It's just basically it's good content. The content is king on Dig or any other social news site.
I guess what I don't understand is you're saying that you're not looking at the content that much. I mean, you do take a quick look at it.
Yeah.
But you're going in and voting for it. Yeah. Which, okay, you know, you're following terms of service and all that sort of stuff. But I don't understand what your motivation would be to go and do that if it wasn't for some sort of reciprocity with other guys to vote for your stuff.
Well, there is a level of reciprocity, but it's also, I want to see good content on the front page of Dig. You know, I want to see the content on, and occasionally, you know, there are plenty of stories every day that I look at that I haven't submitted that are like, damn, that's a really good story. I want to get that to the front page of Dig.
Right.
And so I'll vote on it to promote it. But it's, you know, I'm as much of a reader on Dig as I am a submitter. So I want to see good content on there myself, irregardless of the fact that it's not stuff that I've submitted. You know, I'm as much of a big fan of seeing good content on Dig from other people as I am from myself.
Yeah, obviously you know about all this stuff. I mean, you have your own podcast and you're out there on Twitter as well. And
And, you know, I don't feel that...
I guess, would it be an issue if there was a... I mean, I guess there is this reciprocity. I mean, why would that be an issue if that's not out in the open? It would seem... I mean, it is social networking, right? These are your friends and you're helping each other out. Why would there be a...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I completely agree with that. And I don't understand necessarily why some people have a qualm with it. I mean, the whole idea of behind social networking and social news in particular is that it's social. I mean, you develop relationships around friends, and you help each other out.
Right.
I mean, otherwise it would be done in a... I can't even think of the process or any other site that maybe Yahoo Buzz. I mean, I don't know how clicks form on Yahoo Buzz, but it doesn't seem to me, at least initially, that there's as much social networking through Yahoo Buzz as there is on sites like Dig and Reddit and Next.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't have a problem with it. They're using collaborative filtering like this for a reason, because it's working. I mean, we've known about just simple click voting for a long time, but clearly there's something more powerful when you have a group or a team that are going and doing this stuff. And I guess, you know, just acknowledging that, to me, it is a team, and you guys are actively helping each other out to go and do stuff up. I mean, that's as I understand it. I guess I don't understand why that would be an issue. For me, it doesn't make sense, because that's just how it works. And if you don't like that particular methodology, there's other sites with other ways of doing it.
Right. And people have had qualms. The other thing you brought up was the fact that I'm not looking at everything in depth. And for that point, I would have to say that this is true, but it's hard for me to explain. But having done this as long as I've done it, which, you know, I've been an active member on Dig at least since 2005, late 2005, I think. And I think it's either late 2005 or late 2006. I can't remember which, but I can do the research on that. But having done that, I recognize good content immediately. I mean, I can look at an RSS feed and look at the title and a summary in an RSS feed, and I will know immediately whether that story is front page worthy or not. And that just simply comes down to, boils down to experience. You know, having done it as often as I have, I know immediately just by looking at a summary that story is worthy of the front page.
Well, there's the consulting business right there.
Well, there you go. You know, I mean, it's just an experiential thing. It comes from experience and having seen enough of what constitutes good content on the front page of Dig and other social networking sites, I know what that front page content should look like, and I know how to guide people to get that to happen. And I have actually helped other people out with crafting content specifically for social networks.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously you could do that well. And my thing is, anyway, if you weren't providing value to this team of guys that are going out there and voting for stuff, then your influence would diminish and you wouldn't be able to achieve what you've got done. I don't know, I see it as it's just how it works. I don't understand. So let's talk about the controversy. there was a period, I guess, like a couple months ago, where you know, everyone's calling like Mr. Baby Stan, and you're getting all the anti Mr. Baby Men posts are all getting voted up, and you're getting really ripped on a lot. I mean, some of it I thought it's gotten pretty nasty. Mm-hmm. What's all that about, and why do you think that so much of the community has turned against you, but yet you still remain a top user? I find that fascinating.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, the majority of the accusations of the controversy boils down to accusations that I am accepting money for content submitted. And I never have. And here's the crazy thing about this is that for many of those accusations that have been railed against me, no one has ever brought up any evidence to prove it. So
well,
it's like,
you catch like that, you've got to go get evidence.
No. Right. I mean, you can't. And the evidence doesn't exist because it just does not happen. I don't accept money for submissions.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where the nickname Mr. Baby Spam comes from, is people who think that I'm accepting money. You know, and like I said before, I'd be happy to look at anybody's content and submit it if it's good enough, but I don't do it for money. And I think a lot of it is boiled down to a lot of people are surprised at how one or two or a handful of submitters can be so popular on a regular basis. And I think they have a hard time figuring out why that's possible without any sort of artificial influence.
So effectively, you know, you're over there with the top 100 or so guys. You guys are digging stuff up, and you're there almost like your clique. And then the rest of the community doesn't really understand that. They're just reading stuff and occasionally posting, and so they're the ones that are seeing this stuff, and they're getting annoyed. But your power is still there because you're still tied in with your group of guys that are doing all the work. Is that an accurate summary?
Yeah, we're still providing great content. And I think that wins out overall. I mean, over all of the criticism, if somebody is still providing great content, providing value to the community, the proof of the pudding is right there. I mean, that's the winning argument. And I see the same kind of criticisms and the same things railed against other users as well. But I think it's because I'm perceived as being the top user that I get I bear the brunt of it.
It has gotten really nasty. Is there a group that's actively working against you? I mean, you're attracting all the trolls. Do you think that's where it's coming from?
I totally am attracting trolls. And, you know, and I've seen, here's the other thing too, is a lot of the people who hold that kind of criticism against me, they don't share the same experience that I do. And what I mean by that is that I will look at the profiles. I will go to the profiles of the people who say nasty things against me or other users. And I notice a lot of similarities in the profiles, and that being that they have almost no friends. Like, we're talking people who have maybe five friends at most, and they've submitted virtually nothing, if anything, to the community. So these are people who do not submit and do not have a network of friends and are wondering why people who submit frequently and have a network of friends get to front page.
But it's not just individuals, because their comments are getting voted up, so it is other people in the community that feel the same way, right?
Yeah, but you know, the criticism on the Internet is that because the Internet is essentially anonymous, you get a lot of people who are, one person can say something, and then you have a lot of faceless voices behind them who are like, all right, you know, I have nothing to be afraid of for joining in with criticism, because there are no consequences. Exactly. And that's why, you know, a lot of times individual comments will get voted, individual negative comments will get voted down. But if you see, like, a couple of times there have been whole stories that have been submitted about me, negative stories, and those stories, if they hit the front page, people will just dogpile on top of the stories, because there's no consequence to it. There's no you know, reciprocation on the Internet for being negative.
Yeah, I guess that's a really interesting dynamic, because the larger community doesn't have any power to also do anything. It's you and the guys that are submitting stuff, and so I guess that's where some of the frustration comes from.
Yeah, frustration, I think, is the key word here. There's a lot of frustration, and there's no accountability to negativity on the Internet. And I think that is a huge dynamic. That is a larger problem than any individual criticism that people have against me or any other submitter. It's the fact that there's no accountability for being as nasty as you want to on the Internet.
How are you responding to guys saying that they submitted something 3 days before you did, and you just go and pull all the stuff off Reddit and post it straight on the dig? And do you have routines where you are aggregating from, you know, five other key sites to get there? I mean, how are you finding all this stuff?
Yeah, I find stuff. I have a number of different sources. I've got RSS feeds. I do look at other social networking communities for my content, but there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the content can come from anywhere on the Internet. I mean, there's no social news site has the sole rights to the content that's submitted on it. There's nothing wrong with cross-posting between social news communities. And if somebody, if 10 people, like say for example, if I find a story that is interesting on Reddit, for example, and I submit it to Dig, if 10 people have seen that story already on Reddit and complain about that, there are hundreds of people who haven't seen it, who don't visit Reddit, who haven't seen it anywhere else that appreciate that content on Dig. So it's not about, quote unquote, stealing content from other sites. It's about getting that content on Dig.
So, well, with that point, like, someone, because there's a rule in Dig that says you're not supposed to submit something that's already submitted. But then, so guys, they say they submit something, and then Mr. Babyman comes along and submits it 3 days later, and because it's Mr. Babyman, it goes to the top.
Right. Well, they're talking about stuff that's been submitted to Dig already.
Right.
Right? So, news comes from, here's the situation in a lot of those cases, is that news comes from a number of different sources as well. So, for example, if somebody submits a story from UPI, and that story, for some reason or another, didn't happen to make the front page, and I should, you know, without ever having any contact with that person or their submission, come across the same story on the AP wire and submit that story, and, you know, essentially the same, the story about the same incident, then a lot of times I'll get, you know, people will say, well, I stole that from somebody or such and such person who submitted it, you know, 3 days ago or a year ago or, you know, 6 months ago. And, news sources come from stories come from different sources. So I can't keep track of everything that has been submitted on Dig. And a lot of times Dig's own do detectors don't work as well as they should. And sometimes it's easier if you're doing a search for something that has been on Dig to go to Google and type in the title of the story and then type in Dig to see if it's been on Dig through Google than it is on Dig's own search filters.
So I guess the point is that those guys don't have the contacts that you do to be able to drive a story to the top and their
right.
relationships. And so that's you know, okay.
Right.
So
no.
Dude, you submitted your story 3 days ago and it's still seen there, or you submitted it a year ago and didn't get any visibility. I've done everybody a favor because I've come along and made it rise when you weren't able to, because otherwise it wouldn't got to the top.
Right. Well, a lot of times, and there have been occasions where I will see a story that somebody has submitted. This happened just a couple of weeks ago. I saw a story that a user submitted, and I dug that story up, and I shared it with, you know, a lot of people that I knew, and I spread it around on Twitter and on Plurk and other social networking sites, because I thought it was a great story. I wanted to see it on the front page of Dig, and it didn't get on the front page of Dig. So, like a week passed, and nothing ever came of that. So I ran across that same video again, and I resubmitted it, and I put down right there in the comments, this story was originally submitted by such and such a submitter, but it unfortunately didn't make the front page, and I think that it's worthy of it, so, you know, please give it a look, and if you like it, vote it up. So, but for me, you know, I think the distinction is, for me, I don't care who submits it or who takes the credit for submitting it. It's not about the glory, increasing the glory of Mr. Babyman. It's about getting the content to the front page of the site. I want to see the content.
Why would that be a motive, though? I mean, so you want to be the unpaid employee of Dig that's helping make the site there. What's the motivation for that?
Well, and here's the thing. It doesn't matter. Dig is just my preference. But it doesn't matter to me that it's Dig or Reddit or Mix or Propeller or any other site. I mean, Dig just happens to be my current preference for the site. But I, you know, I want the same thing from stories that I submit at Reddit or Mix as well. I mean, I want to see good content rise to the top and get on the front pages of those sites as well, whether it's me who submits it or not. You know, if it's a story that I think is worth being on there and it, you know, it gets ignored or gets,
I don't understand, because in free software community, you know, like,
yeah.
Richard Stallman and the stuff they're doing there, I don't know whether you agree or not agree, but it's almost like a religious thing, like, you know, we're going to do free software, and this is the right way, it's the one true way, and, you know, we're contributing towards this, but I can understand kind of some of the motivations there, like, you know, that they really are doing some powerful stuff. I guess I don't understand in the same way why you have this motivational feeling of contributing by getting visibility on content.
I'm not sure I understand the question. You know, it's basically it's just it springs from a desire to want to see good content. I want to see good content reach as many eyeballs as possible, whether it's me or somebody else. You know, I prefer it to be me. I won't lie to you. I love the feeling of being the one that brought this great content to the largest number of eyeballs.
Right.
But if the content is good, I don't care. You know, if I see the content somebody else has submitted it, that's why I dig other people's stuff, is because it's great content. I'm like, oh, this is very cool. I want to see it get to the front page. I'm glad that this person has submitted it. You know, and I don't, if the content is good enough to justify resubmitting it later, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with submitting it again after it's been submitted, you know, 3 or 4 days out, when after a point where it'll never reach the front page from the previous submission, to take that content again and give it another go. And if it doesn't work for me, then fine, then I gave it my shot. But it's not about me getting it to the front page. It's about, it's a desire to get that content to the front page, because I think the content is worth it.
A while ago, I guess it was maybe 6 or 8 months ago or so, there was a group of the top users who were going to leave Vig. And I read the chat, and you know, Kevin and Jay came on there and talked with you guys. What was all that about? I mean, what was actually going on there?
Okay, there's a great misunderstanding in what happened during that incident, and it seems to be a misunderstanding that has been the prevailing opinion of what happened. And I'm going to tell you straight out exactly from the horse's mouth itself what that was all about. That wasn't about leaving Dig. It was about getting the staff at Dig to be held accountable to certain guidelines. And what we were going, the primary thing that we were trying to get to happen was we wanted to establish a line of communication between Dig administration, Dig staff, and its users. And that sprung from there had been a lot of complaints from individual users. And a lot of Dig users were coming to me because I guess they see me as representative of the Dig community, and they feel like I have a certain amount of influence being the top Dig user, that I would have a stronger voice than anybody else. A lot of Dig users were coming to me saying, you know, I've been having these issues with Dig, and I've been writing to Dig, and they're not responding. They're not writing back. You know, or some people will come to me and say, hey, you know, I've been banned from Dig, and I didn't do anything. I didn't feel like I did anything wrong, and they're not writing back to me telling me that what I did wrong. They're not communicating with me at all. So a lot of people are coming to me saying, can you do anything about this? What can you do to help establish a line of communication with Dig? Get them to listen to us. And so we outlined a series of points of things that we felt were wrong with Dig that we wanted to see corrected. And primarily the chief number one thing about that, and the point that I still feel the strongest about, is opening a line of regular communication between Dig administration and its users. You know, there are other sites like Reddit and Mix. And Mix in particular has an excellent line of communication between the Mix staff and the Mix users. There's a great sense of camaraderie, and Mix staff and Mix users both feel like they're on the same team. It really hasn't felt that way on Dig. It feels like there is the Dig administration who are essentially feel like they have to police the community and the community itself. And maybe that's because a lot of the community is spammers and marketers and people who are trying to exploit Dig. And that might be the case, but there should be some sort of regular communication between people who are using Dig in good faith and the Dig administration.
So do you have that line of communication now?
No, not quite. But you know, what came out of that conversation with Jay and Kevin was what they called the Dig Town Hall, which was a commitment to have this open forum where they would discuss concerns that the Dig community had on a semi-regular basis. But what I was shooting for, what I really wanted was a regular forum. Like Nick has a forum, and I can't remember what their forum is called, but their forum, they have, you know, it's just like a regular forum where users can start threads about Nix, and they get responded to by the Nix administration. And I think Dig needs the same kind of thing, a regular forum where users can have threads open about certain issues that they have with Dig and expect a response from the Dig administration on a daily basis. You know, at one point, I'll tell you something. A couple years ago, Dig had a celebration to commemorate its million registered users. And I attended that party, and I spoke with a couple of the developers who work at Dig. And that was one of the first times that I mentioned the desire for some sort of an open forum. And at the time, one of the developers, who I don't think is working there anymore, has said, yeah, that was a great idea. And they had been thinking about that too, and even asked me if I'd be interested in heading up that community, being the liaison for that community. And I said, I would love to. You know, it would be, I just want the communication to be established. But that was a couple years ago, and nothing has ever come of that. Every single big town hall that they have, the question comes up, when is the forum going to be ready? When are we going to have an open forum? And the answer is always soon. So
maybe they need someone to go and set up PHP views for them.
Well, you know, that's funny, but they're, you know, they're, like their stance in that regard is that PHPDB is not robust enough for what they feel they need to do with the community. So, and they're looking for, their official word is they're looking for a solution that's going to be extremely robust. But I'm like, my opinion on that is it doesn't have to work right perfectly right out the gate. It can be flawed as long as it's extant, as long as it's there to begin with.
Well, maybe some other reason why I haven't done it yet.
Well, that's the general consensus of a lot of the people who listen to the response from the big administration, is that there must be some other.
I don't understand why they wouldn't want to do that. Because, and so here's the other part I want to ask about this. We have gone over time. This is fascinating to me, so I'm okay to keep going if you are. But
that's fine with me, yeah.
Okay. So you guys, because you made the threat that you were all going to leave the site, right? That's how it was, portrayed.
Okay. Here's the other thing I want to clear up. There was what was called a manifesto. I'm going to try and make a long story short here, but there was a series of complaints that we had drafted about what we felt was wrong with Dig. And it was me and a group of four or five other people, and we all drafted this essentially this letter of complaint with these points, bullet points. And I saw a second to the last draft of that complaint, of that letter of complaint. And then that letter of complaint was published, and a Dig submission was made of it, and it was promoted. I never saw the published version until after it was published. And in that published version included the threats to leave Dig, and there were a couple of other. It was essentially made as like a manifesto, and there was like an ultimatum given. So I was not personally part of the movement to leave Dig. That all happened outside of my knowledge and after the last draft of the letter that I'd seen had been approved. So there are a few members of. There are two or three other people who co-drafted that letter with me that decided that they were going to add on that ultimatum and make it like a revolt and manifesto.
Right, okay. So, because I'm interested in this is, I think, an important question. Let's say that that threat was real and you guys did leave. What happens in that scenario? Do you just, nothing happen and the site goes on as normal? Is there some impact on the quality of storage for a while? Like, what does that actually look like?
Well, you know, I've seen something like that happen. When the Dig recommendation engine came through and after a couple of other tweaks of the algorithm, there was a, let me take that back. It was after Dig had banned about 80 plus users, and these are users who had provided, quality content to the site. So when those users had been banned, that quality content was gone, and for about a week after that, those users had been banned, the Dig front page looked pretty miserable. And in fact, there was a number of stories that were clearly marketing and clearly spam on the front page. And that was because it was the best content to promote because, you know, all of the other sources of great content had been banned essentially. But you know, the process is so robust that the Dig process is so robust that it can survive, losing a good number of top submitters. The problem is that really, from Dig's standpoint, is that really how you want to treat your community?
Let's say if you guys were hired away to go and all work for competing, so let's say you all had to go and work full-time for Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a strategy that could actually work?
Well, I mean, I don't think, the problem is that you're implying that we would be paid for submissions once again, and that's, I think that's outside of my principles.
Well, not to be paid for submission, you'd be paid for doing the stuff that you're doing right now. You would just be, you know, the top 100 of you guys will all become full-time employees right now.
Oh, I see what you're saying, like the way they do it on Propeller, where you're actually paying an editor for.
I wasn't aware that.
I'm sorry?
I wasn't aware that they're already doing that. So there are,
yeah,
doing that.
Propeller does that. Propeller pays their what they call their Propeller anchors, I think they're called, and they're essentially paid editors for the site, and they will monitor the submissions on the site as well as submit their own submissions.
You could hire a way to go and work at, let's say Propeller and hire the 500 of you away, and the deal was no submitting to any other social news site, it could only be Propeller, and, mm-hmm. and now you'll work here. Is that going to work? I guess you've got to get the eyeballs to the site, and that's going to be the problem.
Well, I don't think it would be a problem to get the eyeballs to the site, because the content, I would still be submitting the same content, and content is king. The issue is that Dig is the best vehicle for content delivery in this vertical, in the same space. You know, no other site has the, and I think a lot of it has to do with it digs the reputation they built over the years. Other sites like Mix and Reddit are too known yet to drive that kind of traffic, but I wouldn't count that out entirely. I would still say it's within their power to do so. But once again, being hired and being paid, for me, puts it at a position where this is something that unless I was being paid not to do as a full-time job, but essentially have the same hours that I normally have in contributing to the site, and I'm just getting paid per submission by the site itself, I would never come with that.
So that's what it, you could be doing that on Propeller today, but there's not enough incentive to go out and spend a lot of time doing that, is it?
No, not really. I mean, I think Propeller, once again, they just don't drive traffic. Though I don't even think Propeller drives traffic as well as Mix or Reddit does. I think they're probably lower on the chain, and on top of which, I've never been offered. Nobody's ever offered to do that for me at Propeller. So,
okay. Something I noticed, obviously, for a while during the elections, there was all this Ron Paul stuff. How does the election with that? I mean, was that the top users were all pushing Ron Paul?
Not me. I mean, I appreciate Ron Paul as much as the next person, but I actually get turned off by when it looks like content is being promoted on Digg for an agenda. And that's not just a political agenda. I mean, there was a while there, it wasn't just Ron Paul, but like we were talking about the AACS code key, when that was being promoted on Digg, when the code that basically unlocks copying on Blu-ray and HD DVD devices.
Right.
Remember that incident a while back? When that code was being promoted on Digg, I stayed out of that completely. I didn't want to have anything to do with it because it's not the spirit of social news submitting.
I found the Ron Paul stuff really annoying. I blocked all the political stuff out of my
head. Yeah, same here. And I'm perfectly all right with promoting stories that are relevant and that have some sort of newsworthy basis about Ron Paul. But if it's a story that is whose focus is just simply to promote Ron Paul himself in the mainstream and to say, hey, I'm Ron Paul, I'm great, and my followers love me, and that is the sole purpose of this story, who did. It turns me off. I won't participate in something like that.
Fair enough. Another topic I'm really interested in is 4chan, which I don't really understand it. Comes up a lot on Digg. Do you go over to 4chan a lot? Do you have any ties with that site?
I don't have any official ties with the site, but I have visited 4chan, and 4chan, I have a love-hate relationship with 4chan, in that 4chan is great when it is the wellspring for memes, and 4chan is by and large the biggest wellspring for the more popular internet memes out there. I mean, 4chan came up with the Rickroll and lolcats and the motivators and I can't even exactly among others. But the problem is that. The problem that I have with not with 4chan, but with 4chan stuff appearing on other sites, is that it tends to dumb down the community in general. I mean, I have to think that 4chan has to be a real big problem internally within Digg, because Digg is trying to promote itself to investors and to mainstream, in particular mainstream media, as a source of news, basically a news source. And so when the top stories on Digg are, Kevin Rose's pedo bear jack-o'-lantern. That has to be a problem, in how it promotes itself to its investors, because then it decreases the value of how Digg is perceived in the marketplace, and not just Digg. Excuse me, not just Digg, but any social news site that wants to be. That wants to take itself seriously as a social news site has to feel a bit of a pinch every time it sees lolcats and demotivators on their site.
That's just how the internet is.
That's just how the internet is. There's really nothing you can do about it. I mean,
And Matt Cutts from Google, he just went for Halloween. I'm sure you saw it. He dressed up as Rick Astley.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the influence of 4chan is undeniable. But what does it say for our culture as a whole, I think, is the question.
Fair enough. So Kevin Rose, have you actually met him?
A couple of times, yeah.
So you've been to some of their events?
I've been to the event for the million user celebration and a live Digg Nation. And so I met him. Oh, and I was also part of a focus group at one point for one of the new revisions. So three times I've met.
Have you talked to them a lot, or is it just like, hey, how's it going?
Not a lot, no. He's a nice guy. I have met him on a couple occasions, and he's a decent chap.
Yeah, no, he seems to be. I think I've asked you a lot of stuff. I've actually gone through all things I can think of to ask you. Is there anything we haven't covered you'd like to talk about?
Not that I can think of. But you know, I'm more than happy to do a follow up. Or if you want to, feel free to call me and ask me anything you want.
Okay, I may take up on that. All right, well, Andy, thank you very much for the interview. This is a great one. Fascinating. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.